Chapter 20. The Amazing Story of Joseph. This chapter is based on Genesis 39-41. Meanwhile, Joseph, with his captors, was on the way to Egypt. The boy could discern in the distance the hills among which lay his father's tents. Bitterly he wept at thought of that loving father in his loneliness and affliction. The stinging, insulting words that had met his agonized entreaties at Dothan were ringing in his ears. With a trembling heart, he looked forward to the future. Alone and friendless, what would be his lot in the strange land to which he was going? For a time, Joseph gave himself up to uncontrolled grief and terror. But even this experience was to be a blessing to him. He had learned in a few hours that which years might not otherwise have taught him. His father had done him wrong by his partiality and indulgence. This had angered his brothers and provoked the cruel deed that had separated him from his home. In his character, faults had been encouraged. He was becoming self-sufficient and exacting. He felt that he was unprepared to cope with the difficulties before him in the bitter, uncared-for life of a slave. Then his thoughts turned to his father's God. Often he had listened to the story of the vision that Jacob saw as he fled from his home an exile and a fugitive. He had been told of the Lord's promises to Jacob, and how, in the hour of need, angels had come to instruct, comfort, and protect him. He had learned of the love of God in providing a redeemer. Now all these precious lessons came vividly before him. Joseph believed that the God of his fathers would be his God. He then and there gave himself fully to the Lord and prayed that the Keeper of Israel would be with him in his exile. His soul thrilled with the high resolve to prove true to God, to act as a subject of the King of Heaven. He would meet the trials of his lot with fortitude and perform every duty with fidelity. One day's terrible calamity had transformed him from a petted child to a man, thoughtful, courageous, and self-possessed. Arriving in Egypt, Joseph was sold to Potiphar, captain of the king's guard. For 10 years he was here exposed to temptations in the midst of idolatry, surrounded by all the pomp of royalty, the wealth and culture of the most highly civilized nation then in existence. Yet Joseph preserved his fidelity to God. The sights and sounds of vice were all about him, but he was as one who saw and heard not. His thoughts were not permitted to linger upon forbidden subjects. The desire to gain the favor of the Egyptians could not cause him to conceal his principles. He made no effort to hide the fact that he was a worshiper of Jehovah. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. And his masters saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. Potiphar's confidence in Joseph increased daily, and he finally promoted him to be his steward, with full control over all his possessions. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. Joseph's industry, care, and energy were crowned with the divine blessing. Even his idolatrous master accepted this as the secret of his prosperity. God was glorified in the faithfulness of his servant. It was his purpose that the believer in God should appear in marked contrast to the worshippers of idols. Thus the light of heavenly grace might shine forth amid the darkness of heathenism. The chief captain came to regard Joseph as a son rather than a slave. The youth was brought in contact with men of rank and learning, and he acquired a knowledge of science, languages, and affairs, an education needful to the future prime minister of Egypt. The almost overmastering temptation. But Joseph's master's wife endeavored to entice the young man to transgress the law of God. He had remained untainted by the corruption teeming in that heathen land. But this temptation, so sudden, so strong, so seductive, how should it be met? Joseph knew well the consequence of resistance. On the one hand were concealment, favor, and rewards. On the other, disgrace, imprisonment, perhaps death. His whole future life depended upon the decision of the moment. Would Joseph be true to God? With inexpressible anxiety, angels looked upon the scene. Joseph's answer reveals the power of religious principle. He would not betray the confidence of his master on earth, and, whatever the consequences, he would be true to his master in heaven. Joseph's first thought was of God. "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" he said. Let the young ever remember that wherever they are and whatever they do, they are in the presence of God. No part of our conduct escapes observation. We cannot hide our ways from the Most High. To every deed there is an unseen witness. Every act, every word, every thought is as distinctly marked as though there were only one person in the whole world.
Joseph suffered for his integrity. His tempter revenged herself by causing him to be thrust into prison. Had Potiphar believed his wife's charge against Joseph, the young Hebrew would have lost his life. But the modesty and uprightness that had characterized his conduct were proof of his innocence. Yet to save the reputation of his master's house, he was abandoned to disgrace and bondage. At first, Joseph was treated with great severity by his jailers. The psalmist says, "His feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in chains of iron. Until the time that his word came to pass, the word of the Lord tried him." Psalm 105, verse 18, 19. Joseph in prison. But Joseph's real character shone even in the dungeon. His years of faithful service had been most cruelly repaid, yet this did not render him morose or distrustful. He had peace and trusted his case with God. He did not brood upon his own wrongs, but forgot his sorrow in trying to lighten the sorrows of others. He found a work to do, even in the prison. God was preparing him in the school of affliction for greater usefulness, and he did not refuse the needful discipline. He learned lessons of justice, sympathy, and mercy that prepared him to exercise power with wisdom and compassion. Joseph gradually gained the confidence of the keeper of the prison and was finally entrusted with the charge of all the prisoners. The part he acted in the prison, integrity and sympathy for those in trouble and distress, opened the way for his future prosperity and honor. Every kind word spoken to the sorrowful, every act to relieve the oppressed, and every gift to the needy, if prompted by a right motive, will result in blessings to the giver. The chief baker and chief butler of the king had been cast into prison for some offense, and they came under Joseph's charge. One morning, observing that they appeared very sad, he kindly inquired the cause and was told that each had had a remarkable dream, of which they were anxious to learn the significance. "Do not interpretations belong to God?" said Joseph. "Tell me them, I pray you." As each related his dream, Joseph made known its import. In 3 days, the butler was to be reinstated in his position and give the cup into Pharaoh's hand as before. But the chief baker would be put to death by the king's command. Both events occurred as foretold. The king's cupbearer had professed deep gratitude to Joseph for the cheering interpretation of his dream and for many acts of kind attention. In return, Joseph, referring to his own unjust captivity, entreated that his case be brought before the king. "Think on me," he said, "when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house, for indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon." The chief butler saw the dream fulfilled in every particular, but when restored to royal favor, he thought no more of his benefactor. For 2 years longer, Joseph remained a prisoner. The hope that had been kindled in his heart gradually died out, and to all other trials was added the bitter sting of ingratitude. But a divine hand was about to open the prison gates. The king of Egypt had in one night 2 dreams, apparently pointing to the same event and seeming to foreshadow some great calamity. The magicians and wise men could give no interpretation. The king's perplexity increased, and terror spread throughout his palace. The general agitation recalled to the chief butler his own dream. With it came the memory of Joseph, and remorse for his forgetfulness and ingratitude. He at once informed the king how his own dream and that of the chief baker had been interpreted by a Hebrew captive, and how the prediction had been fulfilled. It was humiliating to Pharaoh to consult a slave, but he was ready if his troubled mind might find relief. Joseph was immediately sent for. He put off his prison attire and was conducted to the king. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee, that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Joseph modestly disclaimed the honor of possessing in himself superior wisdom. God alone can explain these mysteries. Pharaoh then proceeded to relate his dreams. Behold, there came up out of the river seven kine, fat-fleshed and well-favored, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, seven other kine came up after them, poor and very ill-favored and lean-fleshed, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for badness. And the lean and the ill-favored kine did eat up the first seven fat kine. And when they had eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them, but they were still ill-favored, as at the beginning. So I awoke. And I saw in my dream, and behold, seven ears came up in one stalk, full and good. And behold, seven ears, withered, thin and blasted with the east wind, sprung up after them. And the thin ears devoured the seven good ears. And I told this unto the magicians, but there was none that could declare it to me. The interpretation of Pharaoh's dream. Said Joseph, God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. There were to be 7 years of great plenty. Field and garden would yield more abundantly than ever before. And this period was to be followed by 7 years of famine. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine following, for it shall be very grievous. Now therefore, he continued, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land, and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the 7 plenteous years. And let them gather all the food of those good years that come, and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine. The interpretation was reasonable and consistent. The policy it recommended was sound and shrewd. But who was to be entrusted with the execution of the plan? Upon the wisdom of this choice depended the nation's preservation. For some time the matter of the appointment was under consideration. Through the chief butler, the monarch had learned of the wisdom and prudence displayed by Joseph in the management of the prison. It was evident that he possessed administrative ability in a preeminent degree. In all the realm, Joseph was the only man gifted with wisdom to point out the danger that threatened the kingdom and the preparation necessary to meet it. There were none among the king's officers of state so well qualified to conduct the affairs of the nation at this crisis. Can we find such a one as this? A man in whom the Spirit of God is? Said the king to his counselors. From prisoner to prime minister. To Joseph the astonishing announcement was made. For as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand, and put it upon Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried before him, Bow the knee. From the dungeon, Joseph was exalted to be ruler over all the land of Egypt, a position of high honor, yet beset with peril. One cannot stand upon a lofty height without danger. The tempest leaves unharmed the lowly flower of the valley, while it uproots the stately tree upon the mountaintop. So those who have maintained their integrity in humble life may be dragged down by the temptations that assail worldly success and honor. But Joseph's character bore the test alike of adversity and prosperity. He was a stranger in a heathen land, separated from his kindred, but he fully believed that the divine hand had directed his steps. In constant reliance upon God, he faithfully discharged the duties of his position. The attention of the king and great men of Egypt was directed to the true God, and they learned to respect the principles revealed in the worshiper of Jehovah. In his early years, Joseph had consulted duty rather than inclination, and the integrity, the simple trust, the noble nature of the youth bore fruit in the deeds of the man. The varied circumstances that we meet day by day are designed to test our faithfulness and qualify us for greater trusts. By adherence to principle, the mind becomes accustomed to hold the claims of duty above pleasure and inclination. Minds thus disciplined are not wavering between right and wrong, like the reed trembling in the wind. By faithfulness in that which is least, they acquire strength to be faithful in greater matters. An upright character is of greater worth than the gold of Ophir. Without it, none can rise to an honorable eminence. The formation of a noble character is the work of a lifetime. God gives opportunities. Success depends upon the use made of them.